Justin, you spent years building, physically constructing the spaces people inhabit. What was the most profound frustration you have experienced in that hands-on building process that ultimately led you to believe the industry needed something fundamentally different, something like the membranes you now champion?
What a doozy to open with.
Yeah. Jerky.
No, that's like a... And full disclosure, we did not tell Justin that we were going to answer this question, but I knew that the question was going to be answered.
That's
a
lot in that.
I know, but, but it also it encompasses everything that you've done probably in the last, what, 20, 30 years of your building journey?
So we're going to get to that answer, I think, over the course of this podcast episode. Could you maybe just start off by telling people who you are?
Yeah, so I started tinkering in my downstairs shed at mum's.
At the age of 12, I believe.
Yeah, so my
Stealing your brother's tools.
So my older brother, 5 years older, started a carpentry and joinery apprenticeship at the time with the state government when they used to build their own homes. Just building furniture for mum to put in, you know, the lounge room and that sort of thing. I used to love working with hand tools. I used to steal my brother's. Yeah, he didn't like it too much because he was 5 years older. So we were always fighting. But, yeah, and then he went off and worked in a joinery shop, and I used to work with him before his boss every single school holiday from high school.
What were you like at school? Were you like academic at school?
I guess I did okay.
Yeah.
Had, you know, quite a few outstanding achievements, if they're still called that these days.
Sure.
Was it weird that you went into a trade? Were you sort of
earmarked? I think that's what I was getting
at. Are you earmarked as like the academic you should be going to uni type?
I always thought that my dad would have liked that. Mm-hmm. And was a little bit disappointed. He's definitely not now. Mm. Maybe I just thought that. I never asked him. But I did think that he was a little bit disappointed that I didn't further my education.
At tertiary level?
Yeah, and into uni because I had quite good grades. My brother did as well. And he left at grade 10. I left at grade 10.
Yeah.
And went into a trade. And I guess from that, we've both been successful in our own way, I guess.
Do you know what's really interesting about that comment is there is still this kind of stigma around that you are intelligent or you're less intelligent if you choose a trade over tertiary education. Mm. I feel it's changing a bit now. But
I think COVID helped because people saw during COVID that, like, they're still working, they're earning very good money, their job is safe.
I guess the point I'm trying to make is that, like, even like watching you sort of tell that story just then, there's this – I guess almost a justification of, all right, well, I dropped out of school and then maybe dad wasn't as, you know, proud of me for maybe not finishing school and then going to university. Like, there's actually nothing wrong with it. I mean, it's such a small moment in our life where the, you know, in your, you know, late teens, early 20s of when you decide to either stay at school and go to university or not. That's, what, 4 or 5 years of your life out of however many years. Such a small part that everyone focuses so much on. And they judge you on the decisions that you make then.
Mm. And you're like 18, 19 too.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyway, so digressing.
Yeah, yes. I mean, I don't know which, how you judged success, you know, if it's via financial success, well, it's a good path to go down. You know, I bought my first house at 21.
Yeah, wow.
I bought a brand new car when I was 18.
Yeah.
You know, there's all those things, obviously, with the bank, but I was able to and I saved a lot.
I imagine a 21-year-old at the moment would just, that's,
I mean,
borderline, impossible unless mum and daddy chop you out. Yeah.
We were a bit behind, obviously, I'm from Tasmania and from Hobart, and we were a bit
Scarsfield
behind.
Yeah.
My wife's hasn't. Yeah. Actually, she had an operation on her neck, but it's like, it's a good joke. We were really, our property market, we were, you know, no one knew about Tasmania, and it was only until about 2004, 2005, the property market exploded.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it opened up to the mainland Australia and
rentals
were bought everywhere.
I love Hobart. I think it's the most untapped place in Australia.
Oh, Tassie's, I've been down to Tassie probably 3 or 4 times this year and
Great whiskey.
It's amazing.
Great food, great people. People just love it.
It's freezing down there. I mean, it's really nuts. What, it's 1 or 2 degrees cooler than Melbourne.
Yeah, but it's not. It's a different cold. It's like a nice cold. It's a cold you can still walk around in and during the day. Where you come to Melbourne, it's windy, it's rainy, it's blowy. Yeah. Like it's like this nice, you put your jacket on and go for a walk.
A really nice connection with nature there. But look, so 12 years old, you start tinkering and then you at in year 10, so 15, 16, you started to carve your apprenticeship.
Yeah, so I started in major construction. So I started with a really big commercial builder. It was Fletcher Construction.
Do you remember your first day on the job site?
it was scary being on a major construction site back there. We had like Favco cranes, we call them tower cranes, and our labourers used to drive them. So the labourers employed by the company were crane drivers. So, and they were open ticket scaffolders, they did everything. But, you know, they, like used to call that greasing the apprentice. Like it used to have, it was rife. You know, they'd tape up apprentices in wheelbarrows and wheel them out into the mall in the city and hooked up one of the apprentices, my apprentice, was my age.
I'm laughing.
And they hooked him up with, from his nail belt with the crane. Like they've just brought it down. And then the other labourers hooked him up and then they've lifted him like 30 centimetres off the ground and went to morning tea.
I don't know why I still find it funny. Like, I've got like, a sixth sense of humour. Okay. And it's not okay.
It's not okay. I mean, I guess it's amusing, but, like, I guess just the... Like, that's traumatic.
It's... Like, do you still play with your opponents, like, go get me the left-hand hammer or left-hand screwdriver? Do you play the game of,
I don't
like,
have time for that anymore, mate.
No, I used to.
And yeah, like, that's harmless fun.
Yeah, of course. But that's, you know, like, when you can actually physically hurt someone, it's not okay.
Yeah, I think physically and mentally as well. I mean, there's a... Mental health's a big thing these days.
It is,
Digressing a little bit. So
construction, and you're in construction for 25 years.
Yeah, so I started my carpentry and joinery apprenticeship. We're lucky enough to have both.
Yeah.
So I qualified in both areas.
I feel like joinery probably like suits your personality, like that sort of real fine detail.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. Obviously, I'm back to the furniture when I was 13. And,
That
was 1995 I started.
Yeah, great year, 95. Carlton won their last grand final. We're still holding on to it.
Yes, I stayed there for quite a while, but I didn't like it.
You didn't like building?
No, I didn't like major construction. I didn't like the personalities back then on site. There was thefts of tools at lunchtime, you know, all that sort of dynamic. And, you know, there was some pretty brutal type of people on site in those major jobs. And it just, I didn't like it. I got my trade and worked with that company for a while, another year. And then, got my marching orders and... Thought, okay, so I got my ABN.
Yep.
And gave him a notice, because I had 3 months' notice.
Yeah.
And I said, no, I've got a job, I'm leaving. That was within 5 days. And I turned back up on that same site for one of the subcontractors to our principal and started working on contract, and it was like, yes, it was the best.
So you can now dictate what you wanted and push
around. Yeah, it's like I'm the boss. They've sacked me, and then I turned back up on their site on earning heaps more money as a contractor. I didn't stay there that long. It was just a gap, and then I got a contracting job with a really fastidious residential builder.
Yeah,
really pushing the boundaries. That was a long time ago.
Pushing the boundaries in what way?
Using alternate products. Not alternate as we look at it today, but obviously we're talking about double glazed windows, thermally broken aluminium frames.
And we're going back, what?
As 2002.
Yeah. So, I mean, that stuff back then is pretty innovative. I mean, it's not innovative now, but like in
he was looked at as nuts.
Yeah.
You know, just the things we were doing with insulation.
But how did you read on this? Because back then there was not, like, the internet was developing. Like, where were you resourcing? Like, the encyclopedia? Like,
that's... Well, obviously this came from the guy I worked for, and he was innovative.
European?
No.
Really?
But the people we associated with had products that were innovative.
Yep.
And they were doing a lot of research outside Australia, and they were doing a lot of trips outside Australia, especially in the glazing space. Yeah, it was that sort of got my interest and realised that, well, hey, it actually makes a difference, this insulation and double glazed windows. He was looked at as nuts.
Yeah.
Absolutely nuts. Why would you pay 4 times the price for a window, sometimes 5 times the price, when I can just... get it for this price.
Like, the crazy thing, what's the difference? It's only one extra layer of glass. Most of these units still fit too light. Like,
yeah.
So I don't understand why it was ever 4 times the amount when it's just like we're just adding an extra bit of glass.
Mm. Well, I mean, it is now.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, probably not even double, but yeah.
It's like 3%.
It was a premium.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was great. I essentially did my apprenticeship again with him.
Yeah. And would you say that this builder was creating the market back then, or was there demand for it?
I don't think so. He was a bit of a closed shop sort of a guy, did his thing, and there was no social media or anything back then.
Yeah.
You know, mobile phones.
MySpace, Justin would have been his top friend on MySpace.
I'm surprised you know what MySpace is, man.
Yeah, so, but yeah, I guess, you know, it was time to move on from him. I stayed with him for like 5 years and learnt a massive amount. And my brother worked for him together. So we worked with my brother for that time. So yeah, it was great working with him. His nickname on site was the Clockmaker. You know, he'd always get ribbed about, oh, you know, we're not building clocks.
Yeah.
Because he's there, you know, doing his framing.
And, yeah.
You know, it's like, it doesn't need to be that neat.
Yeah, interesting.
We're not building them.
So how does that go with you now? Because you're such a perfectionist.
I want to get
that's
to that.
That's a long story.
I want to get to that, but I just kind of want to fill in a couple of other gaps because I just want to put some context in because obviously we're all in the high performance space now, yeah, right? And yeah. I, you know, and just for context, I really moved into this space about 2018. But, you know, you built a true 9-star home, is that right?
Yes.
Way back when?
Yes, that was, I think, 2008, I think we started design.
When the current, so when the current code asked, required what?
Were there even 5-star back
probably.
Then? I don't think it was. There wasn't 5-star. There wasn't anything.
So there was really no. There wasn't as many external forces back then, other than your pure interest.
Client driven.
Yeah. Were you the client?
No.
No.
Okay. No. So that was client driven.
Client driven.
From a scientist.
Yeah. Okay. All right,
he wasn't a building scientist. He was a marine scientist.
Yeah.
But yeah, driven by
critical thinking. Yeah.
The
do you still talk to that client now?
Yes.
Like okay, and what's the lived-in experience in that home now?
Oh, they love it.
Yeah, interesting.
I'd love to chat to them.
So me it was, too.
It was,
yeah.
It was. It's a full sole passive design.
Yeah.
I think within. It was very early that they said that they thought about a heat exchanger.
Wow.
And what year was this?
So they moved 2010. I think they moved in.
Yeah.
And they said that's the one thing that they would change is to put a heat exchanger because that building was 3 air changers.
Wow. Okay.
So that was We were playing with membranes back then, so that had a ceiling membrane.
Yeah.
Because we were concerned about moisture migration through the structure.
An intelligent membrane internally?
No, didn't have any.
Just so like a cardboard or
problematic.
Something?
Problematic. So yeah. We used a silver foil at that time.
Well, I mean,
so that's problem on another sort of level.
I mean, for context though, I mean, like, they were completely acceptable back then. You know, we didn't really know any.
Have you ever tested it? Have you ever actually cut open?
There's nothing wrong with it. So yeah, that has been looked at,
mm-hmm.
and they vent the house out. They manage the house, so it is okay. But it can be a problem in summer.
Okay.
And yeah, I mean, I think that building back then, it's a rafted roof, and I think it had blanket on the roof actually.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Cold roof or hot roof? Warm roof.
Well, that's an interesting conversation in itself.
Yeah, it is.
That's a whole other
hot roof. The structure's insulated.
Well, Tim, so, that's depending on the Australian version or European way when we talk about a hot or cold roof.
Anyway, that's it's a cathedral roof.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, so I think the next project after that, we started bringing in Class 4 vapor permeable membrane for the roof. So that was after that. So we started bringing it in.
That's still a long time ago, though. Like
yes, I'm the crazy guy.
Yeah,
everyone thinks I'm mad.
Do they anymore though?
No, because I think now, well, they say he was actually onto something back then.
Yeah.
The mad scientist.
Yeah.
But
well, no, maybe there's just more people that are crazy around you now. You're just attracting the crazies.
Yeah, probably. I guess it was the first true 9-star building. It had air tightness.
Yeah.
It had thermally double broken double glazed windows. I built a custom curtain wall.
Right.
So we glued double glazed low E panes onto the whole facade of the front of the building. So the frame was insulated by the glass.
Wow!
It's like boat building.
Did you vacuum? How did you make the space in double glaze then?
It's boat building. You're putting glazing a boat. It's the same process.
And how did you then double glaze it to make that airspace?
You get double glaze units. They just turn up.
Oh, okay.
And the frame is there.
So you've actually made your own.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I've done it multiple times and at home as well.
And I want to get onto your house in a tick too. So
yeah, that was leading in a lot of areas. It had a decoupled slab.
Yeah, right.
So I really, really pushed the engineer hard. I went into their office and met with them. I said, I want to firmly break this whole slab.
And what was your motivation back then, right? You obviously knew.
I think I started to understand it.
Yeah. Okay. So it's just about, and it was education on off your own bat. There's no tradesperson course. There was no social media. There's nothing. It's about
simply own research and talking to many, many people, leaders in the field, and just trying to compile it all together and listen to everything, and then try and work it out.
Yeah.
What's the best way?
And was there modelling? to kind of understand that back then, or just was it just more intuitive?
We used Nathers.
Yeah.
Okay. Back then you didn't have to.
Yeah.
But we did.
Did you use it as a costing tool as well then, or did you use it as a decision maker for performance?
Well, I don't think it actually drove the performance. The client and I drove the performance, and the client wanted us as high performing as possible. So the decoupled slab come from me later. So originally we designed in Hebel on top of the footings.
So you just built like the Hebel's the actual like structure?
Yeah, so the Hebel disconnected the footing, but I went further during the construction and asked the engineer, can I foam the whole lot and then remove all the bars and go straight over the top of the
What's the compressive footings. Strength of Hebel?
Oh, it's quite.
But yeah, I'm
normally go. We've put it under rammed earth walls.
Oh, okay. Wow, you've actually like shocked me. I didn't think it was. I thought it was just aerated concrete cladding. Wasn't that?
You can get the box. They're 200 by.
Yeah, okay.
Interesting.
That aren't reinforced the box.
Yeah, I mean, because they've got an R rating because it's aerated concrete.
Yeah, it's so. Not that great, yeah.
But it's enough for a thermal break.
Yeah, right? Correct.
Yeah,
but anyway, so we put 50 mil foam, XPS foam under the whole slab. The engineer made us get 450 kPa foam. Which is
fucking mind-boggling.
Because
where do you get that?
There was someone local. We imported it from Melbourne.
And do you think that was just them managing their risk at the time? Yeah, okay. So because now, just for context, like the foam that we use now from DC Tech is 300 kPa.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, which is actually more than what you need.
Yeah, if you look at the ground, yeah.
Yeah. Was 150?
Yeah, 120, 150.
Yeah, bottom of a footing, strip footing, yeah.
I guess the only, yeah, it does compress a little bit, but
you design in that compression though. The engineer will design in the compression, yeah.
And it's spread out. Yeah, so we did have to put R10 dow bars into the perimeter.
Okay.
Every 600. That was the.
That's not too bad.
That was the only.
Look, this I reckon decoupler slabs is a whole other.
We don't have to now. Like
no, we still had to tie.
Yeah,
last week we just tied down with. Cranked bars down into.
It just depends on the soil classification.
All my soils is like as bad as it gets.
Depends on soil classification and the appetite of the engineer.
Yes.
My theory on it is if.
The weight should hold it down.
If your house is moving off that footing structure, then there's a whole bunch of other shit that's gone wrong.
Well, the
cog bars ain't going
to
do.
No, those restraint bars actually contribute to the slabs cracking because when it shrinks.
Correct, yeah.
It actually holds and it's got to give somewhere. So. If it's just floating there, like the slabs, when they're actually totally disconnected and sitting there, they don't really crack. It's very unusual. I've done so many of them, I just sit there.
And we're talking, you know, clutching at straws here, but you're trying to decouple the slab from the ground to reduce thermal bridges, and you're actually then putting thermal bridges into that slab by putting. And I know it's marginal. Yeah,
point thermal bridges.
Yeah,
point. But you can also use now the glass hover bars.
You can, yes. You, but
I've just done it on my whole. That's what I did in my house.
Yeah. Did you find you had to bring them in from overseas though?
No, Madewell products supply them.
I know Madewell do them, but I know they're a special.
No, we didn't use cranked bars. We just made our own for our infill slab. We actually just used the glass fiber and made our own like mesh, our own SLA.
But yours is different. Yours is a slab over the top. So
yeah, yeah. You could do that. You could do the same concept
You can get the crank bars. Yeah, you can. From my understanding, you've got to bring them.
They are making them.
You just got to order them in.
Yeah, right.
They just got the machines. They're pretty sure from our shouldn't
to crank them here.
Yeah, all right. Well, Madewell, if you want to come on as a sponsor for this podcast, then
so yeah. Anyway,
the 9-star home, was that your business, your building?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So you're a builder, 9-star home. Early 2010, they've moved in.
Yeah.
At what point did you then drink the Kool-Aid for the whole passive house thing?
It was at that point that project won a few awards.
I'm not surprised.
Best custom home. In its price point, energy efficient home of the year in Tasmania, and then energy efficient home in Australia. It was at that point. We went to Sydney. There was a big fanfare event, and we won. We had some celebrities there as MCs, and they're looking at me. I was up against these massive businesses that are taking all these awards, sponsored by New South Wales government, and the MCs going, so how many of you? Is there a view? Like, yeah, you're a big team? And it's like, oh, no, I'm just a sole trader. Really? He was just amazed that I was there. And we were finalists in quite a few other areas as well. And, it was good. It made the Sydney Morning Herald.
Wow.
And then it was sort of like, Oh, I've got the pinnacle. Where am I going to go now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So then I started researching, and then I found this thing called Passive House in Europe, and started doing a lot of research.
Geez, you would have gone down a rabbit hole.
So that was like 2013. Wow. Wasn't much happening here. Claire Parry was doing some stuff. She was the founding
of the
association.
And Harley Truong in 2014 built his.
Yeah, in Canberra.
Was he the first Passive House, Harley?
No, there's one in Adelaide, I think.
Adelaide, interesting, because like, there's not many Passive
House. There's not many.
Yeah.
It was a Kangaroo Flat or somewhere, or was that, mate? It was around there. I think the Wontagi one was the first one in Victoria, I think.
Yeah, there were weird spots. You would have thought like there would have been, say, for example, one in like a Toorak or a really big architect be like, let's just do something that hasn't been done before.
Do you know what? I'm actually not surprised that it was regional, because if you think about the idea of Passive House is this kind of left field, kind of, you know, wacky, you know, whatever kind of construction, which probably suits owner builders. So I feel like mainstream architecture is only starting to pick it up now.
Yeah.
And a lot of those early passive houses, geez, they were ugly buildings.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that really hurt the passive house site movement for a while, where there was this probably misconception that you can't have a beautiful, sustainable building that's like healthy and efficient to live in and it look good.
Yeah, I mean, there's other things to think about too, like form as well is a big thing in getting a certified building. So that does sometimes dictate the design. So it is harder on interestingly designed home to meet certification. But back to you. So you've done the 9-star, you've got a bit of traction, you've found Passive House. Mm. I always think of it like you've found this religion around for a while.
Got the PHPP, so I bought it from Germany, from Passive House Institute.
So did you know anyone that was using it at that time?
No, not really. I think Claire was yourself. And there was a few people. So I just sort of got it and then found that there was going to be this course coming up.
Yeah.
With Box Hill.
Yep.
And there's an Irish trainer coming over.
Yeah.
So I registered for the designer course and paid for it.
Yep.
And some things happened at work and I had to bail out of that, didn't get a refund.
So you actually never went to the course?
So then I went to the tradesperson course and I took the guy who worked for me with me.
Yeah.
And ProClimber was offering a scholarship. And I was lucky enough that I won that, did a submission and got a scholarship in the end. I actually did a deal with the guy who I was going with saying, if you win, we'll split it.
Yeah.
So this is before you had a bigger relationship with ProClimber.
Yeah. So that's sort of where that's sparked.
Okay.
I was sitting in a hotel room in Melbourne because we had to come over and do the course.
Yeah.
For a whole week, which was great because we hung out with the trainer because everyone else was from around here. And
yeah, you know.
So what I was having a PHPP at the table after school, and I'm asking him all these questions. Like, I'm planning my home.
It's a one-on-one conversation. You got one-on-one training. Yeah.
Where's his expert?
To touch on this for a sec too, did you do, when you did your Passive House tradesperson course, was it in person or online?
It was in person, and I did mine with Burkhard at Box Hill TAFE, and I think the course that they offer then is vastly different to what's offered now.
It is vastly different, and I can understand why it switched online because it's easier. However, I did the same course with Burkhard as well, right? And there is just something about sitting in a room with someone as passionate as Burkhard. Yeah. Everyone knows Burkhard.
I still think you can do it online. Yeah. I still think you can make it passionate online. I just think the information that's taught and the care and the love that is taught isn't there anymore.
Oh, look, I'm going to refrain from commenting on that because I haven't done the online course because I don't have any experience in it. But I just feel like being in person, like us sitting here right now, right, I think would get so much more out of than if we were doing this online.
Well, it's easy to communicate. You can talk to all the people that are there.
And I think you pick up on cues as well from other people that you just kind of don't get online. And you try to online. But anyway.
I just did the designer course online and it was so different, the experience, compared to doing it in person.
Yeah.
With the tradesperson course. Like it was – I can't even – the courses were so different and I've got to be careful what I probably say here – that the
it's the first time that
no I know but like the
being careful
I saying I oh, if you really want me to tell you what
no,
I think
no, no,
I will
no, 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 I, do not, I don't
the I think that the way the Burkhart taught us, and that he kind of just took you under your wing, his wing, and was like, "Hey, I've got you. Well, right? Yeah. Like, I'm going to put my effort into so you. Passionate. Like, yeah. I'm going to teach you everything that I have." I feel like now it's more of a commercial agreement. Like, we're going to teach you, and that's it. I think it's the passion's gone from it.
No, but yeah, okay. Totally digressing, and I do agree.
But yeah, you do get that when you're in the classroom.
Because I see get that connection. Yeah, I see you and your passion, and we click, and we both can solve a problem together, and so then we keep in contact. And
yeah,
well, that's right. I guess we were sitting next to me in the first Passive House course.
True.
Devin behind me. Asking me all these questions because he knew I was already doing this stuff. Yeah. We're building one at the moment. We're implementing HRV and air barriers, and he's asking me all these questions, so many questions. And, you know, had the class clown, Stuart Lee.
Oh, yeah, had Stewie there back then too.
He is hilarious. He was absolutely the clown of the class. He was absolutely hilarious, asking funny questions. And he got it. I was there thinking, this guy, he's not going to get it. Like, and he was a bit negative to start with. And then he got it in the class. And it's like, yeah, that's it. But I still thought, look where he's gone now.
I want to touch on that for a second because I reckon I had a very similar moment too. So I kind of just – I found out about Passive House through Sven from Maxa Design, literally went online that night, booked the course, which just happened to be in 2 weeks' time. And I kind of went into it really green, not really knowing what Passive House was. Within 5 minutes of sitting in there, the penny just dropped. And it sounds like you had the same moment. Stewie had the same moment.
Yeah.
Devin's obviously had the same moment as well. It just fucking makes sense.
So that's maybe where I don't give credit to the course now is the penny's already dropped through things like social media for so many people. When we did it, that was it. Like, this was this new thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's the hot, sexy, I don't know what this is. I'm learning. Now there's so much information through what we all put out that you go into this course kind of already knowing enough.
Yeah, interesting. So there's not that kind of like dopamine hit.
It
was when I came home.
Yeah.
And in the plane going, it's just changed my life.
It had the same
on the way home moment. In the plane I'm changed.
I canned within, I think, 2 weeks, I actually canned a job. I was like, I'm not building this way anymore. I went full cold turkey.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's the way like our brains work. We're just like, we're just going to do it.
Literally pivot. Like I was that way and then I was that way without question.
I stayed out there because ours was out in like.
It was in Lilydale.
Lilydale, yes, which is like an hour and a bit from here. Lilydale. And so I actually stayed out there for a hotel for 2 days because I had the exam and I wanted to study. And I was like, I remember how I was watching a TV series at the time and I just was like, I really want to finish the series. I was loving it, but I could not stop reading about it. Yeah, I was just like so consumed about building. And it was the first time I felt that's like, why aren't we being taught this from...
It just makes sense.
Yeah.
It just makes sense. So from there, you were designing, you're already designing or you're already building a passive house?
I was designing a high performance house to myself, which looks nothing like it does now. I was designing a jelly bean, essentially, with a compound curve roof.
Okay.
Designing
a jelly bean?
Because I used to do projects that were very difficult, I guess, technically complex.
I don't like to make your life
so serious. I did a compound curve roof.
Out of what?
Well, we actually had to build it. I had to lay the steel because there was a box gutter all around it. And it sort of compound curved. We had to lay 20 by 20 steel and actually fabricate this compound curve.
So hang on, you've built this or you were...
That was before. And then we cut it off at 45 and it looked like a wave breaking as you drove up to it. And
this is at your house?
Curved double glazed glass.
Wow.
Is that your house?
No.
Oh.
This is one I did. So this is where I got the bubble and the jelly bean and realised this is ridiculous. I'm never going to be able to afford this. I'm building it myself and I'm going to take 10 years building it. So I went and designed something more look like an eagle shape.
And this house that you built now is a certified passive house in Tassie and it's CLT or Mass Timber?
No, that's another job that I did.
Okay.
What haven't you done?
I don't do anything.
You've got such a good experience. I feel like
we're going to keep talking for ages.
I feel like the point you are at your career there and where I'm at, like you've done so much more than what, like you've got such good experience in so many different facets of construction.
I love a challenge. I thrive at a challenge.
So this is interesting because I am going to touch on mental health and I'm going to touch on well-being because, and I, you know, it's been no secret that I've gone through my own sort of challenges over time and I, you know, as I learn about myself, I understand why I am who I am, you know, diagnosed ADHD, diagnosed anxiety disorder, I get dopamine off putting myself in situations that are challenging, and I get really fucking bored when things are easy. Mm. And it kind of sounds like you're very
like a sucker for pain.
Yeah, but I am. Yeah, I love that's right. Exactly. But I love problem solving. But so your home that you live in now, certified passive house, off grid.
Yeah.
And I remember chatting with you last week, and you were like, I think I said the same thing as what you did. You can't put your finger on what it's like to live and be in a passive house.
No.
But it just feels different, and your life is different, and you feel healthier and comfortable. And like, you're now living in this home that's a certified building, which, what was your out changes?
The result was 0.14.
Yeah, okay.
0.14. So you're the one that screwed up all the original data.
No, we didn't put that one in. That was not – you're talking about referring back to CSIRO.
Yeah, where
that – that was – no, that was my – I had three others that went in there. I didn't realise it was chasing averages of what the homes are in each state. And we – it's like all the most airtight buildings were done in Tasmania.
And you screwed it up.
Like, we don't need to do anything in Tasmania because they're already building tight houses.
Yeah.
Okay. But it was just you.
Well, Sean Maxwell always said I screwed the results in Tasmania.
So, you go.
I was just going to say, because there was a point, so you built your own certified passive house, you're off grid, like you feel like you're happier, but you probably weren't.
Yeah.
There was something out building that kind of wasn't.
Well, because I guess I'm hands-on.
Yeah.
I'm a micromanager.
So you're on the tools as a builder, nail bag on the whole time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Up until towards the end where I just simply couldn't. I mean, obviously I was running another business.
Which is PHCP. PHCP, which we'll touch on.
Yeah. And it was pretty busy, but building was taking up 80% of my time. And I lost a lot of sleep for years. And that's just because I care and we care. It's our builders, you know, how we are. Some that don't, sometimes I wish that I didn't.
Yeah.
Do you think people don't understand that about what we do, that there's this misconception that they just rock up, get there at 7 o'clock, build a house, go home at 3 p.m., that's it?
Oh, there is that. I mean, I was talking to someone yesterday and she said, well, you're the sort of person I'd want building my home. Well, that, you know, apart from your mental health and you can't sleep and you're personally attached to this project, that's who I want building my home. And, I get that. That's who I'd want building my home too.
There's so much anxiety around building that I can say that the amount of times you go home and you're still thinking about it, you wake up in the middle of the night thinking about, like, did I allow enough for that? Construction prices are going up.
Well, this is an issue. Moment going, oh, did I?
Yep.
Like I had that the other day. I got on site. I was like, I didn't able flex around the block work for the decoupled slab. So I've had to send three of my team there while the client's there for an on-site meeting. We had to run around putting able flex around the whole outside to allow for some expansion. That your brain does not stop as a builder.
But you got to the point where you decided not to be a builder anymore.
I tried to separate myself from site because obviously managing the red tape and all that goes with that of being a builder.
Yeah.
Essentially, they're just the one job at a time really doesn't exist anymore because there's so much challenge with banks, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So I tried to distance myself and leave it to the site, but every time I go to site, there's things that, I was trying to look the other way.
Like what examples?
Well, it was fine, and everyone would go, that's okay, but it's not okay. I used to make the tradesmen, when we used to do decks, for instance, I'd make them turn the Phillips head screws all in the same direction, and they'd do that by hand. You know, door hinge screw, they've got to be all... Right.
I mean, as the owner, the client.
Well, they don't give a shit.
Well, they're just like,
someone will see it one day.
This builder, oh my God. But like that was literally doing your head in.
Yeah, and thank God for torque head screws,
What, you can't see.
Nah, imagine like the stars and he's like making sure they're all, now there's like instead of like the four points on a Phillips head, now you've got like the seven or eight. It's like, are they all?
And did the team ever like go, oh, I'm going to Justin's
everyone's yes, that happened a lot.
And we're laughing about it, but like this was like having a severe impact on you and your mental well-being.
Not that I personally knew it at the time, because I was just, going for it. I was essentially a workaholic. And if I wasn't at work, I was feeling guilty.
I feel that.
I get that.
So you know, like there was a year where, you know, a whole year where it was a minimum 70 hours was a light week.
Was that when you're building your own house?
Like, no, this is on site.
So when you're building your own house, going back a little bit, were you more sort of addicted to work then because it's your own, I'm living in this?
Well,
this
has to be even more. Well, yeah, spend every single weekend there as everyone does.
Or did you step back a bit being like, it's my house, I can live with that not being lined up with the deck screws. I can live with that not being perfect. It's just clients' houses. You were more, it has to be up.
Yeah, I did let go a little bit with mine. Yeah. Clients' houses, no, I can't do that because that's me.
Do you know what? I actually feel the same way. Like my wife shakes her head at, you know, particularly with our past home. That, you know, our house would be different now, but our past home, she's like, how can you do what you do every single day at work and you demand such a high level of finish every single day at work and your projects run pretty well every single day at work, but you can't fucking fix up that half a dozen things that have been sitting there for the last 12 months.
Well, why can't you put that thing back in the pantry in its spot?
Oh, just, yeah, like it's interesting when it's your own home, right? Because yeah. You would think, and I know it's ironic because my client's home, like that's my reputation, that's my brand, you know, that's everything. Whereas my own home, I kind of feel like I can just let it go. It
doesn't matter so much.
It doesn't matter, yeah.
Like, and it just sits there, the list sits there.
Is there one thing that you've done for a client that you've sat there and still to this day is like, I wish I'd like, it just still eats you alive a little bit? Is there one thing that
great question.
You just like, you're waiting for the call of something or that wasn't right?
Yeah, it's a recent job and it's a CLT job. We were going for certification, essentially got to the end. Everything was done, everything was submitted. But we got picked up on technicality. And I raised it initially. So the owners didn't want a certified passive house. They knew I was building it.
Yeah.
You know, getting what they were
paying for.
And I flagged a skylight. It had a triple glaze roof light. It was quite a large one. It was 4.5 metres by 3.5 metres or something.
Yeah, custom made in Australia.
With six panels. Shit. So the plan had St. Lucia Suite, unthermally broken section, with all these spaces to get the 50 mil glass in. And I flagged, I said, this is not going to be okay. We've got
from a passive house point of view.
Yeah, it's
a
thermal bridge. Yeah, so I was researching section. I tried to get the Unilux curtain wall section.
Yeah.
So we could get that over and make it, but then they wouldn't guarantee it off vertical.
Yeah.
So I was 30 degrees. No. I said, okay. So I talked to Andreas from Rayco.
Yeah.
And he said he'd provide the section. But obviously it was expensive. The owners didn't want a certified passive house and they thought it was okay and it didn't really get past that stage. I pushed and that was it. At the end, it undid it. It didn't meet the thermal bridge calculation.
But it still works. The house is perfect.
Well, yeah, it still works. PHI said electrify the aluminium to heat it up. That's a solution. We couldn't get power to it because you can warm it up. To get it above the dew point.
I did not know.
Have you ever monitored to see if it does have an issue?
It's too high.
Because it could be
7 meters in the air.
Okay, this is great, right? There's the theoretical certification, right, that everyone is going for. That nice plaque on the wall. But I'm always interested in the lived-in experience. So those clients, yes, you know that it's not a certified home. Yes, you know you could have done some things to that particular skylight. But do the clients love living in the house?
Well, oh, that they have a certified passive house.
So the house is perfect.
It just didn't get stripped up right at the end. Everything was there. It was disappointing.
But you didn't fail you didn't fail the certification because you were never going for it.
No, right? No. Correct. We didn't fail it.
And
we just didn't meet it.
And it wouldn't change anything of the lived experience at all.
No. And that's what I was kind of getting at. And look, from my understanding of the way the PHPP works, the skylights are kind of a bit of a brown anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
windows.
But you probably fit in with PHI Low Energy certification.
No, this one doesn't.
Yeah, because you failed the thermal bridge. Yeah, yeah, you fail.
You fail like comfort. It's like the Baldor test.
You fail the comfort criteria.
Mold.
Yeah,
it's the mold. So okay, so maybe it's mold potential.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
It'd be really interesting to see if you could monitor that, and then in say 7-8 years, be like, no, there's still no mold, and they'd then can't be like, no, you're okay now.
It's anecdotal. They wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I know, but it's like, I think this is where sometimes it goes a little bit too far. Like, is that going to change?
Well, yeah, I guess they do go. They've got their rigid, they've got their process. They made me do a thermal bridge calculation on my house, on my curtain wall glazing in the middle, and I said that it's going to be a negative thermal bridge, and they said I still had to do it anyway. So it improved the PHP because, yeah, it was. It was actually an improvement.
Yeah.
The thermal bridge, but I knew that. Yeah. But they said, no, you have to do it, so it's very rigid.
Yeah.
It was okay.
Which I think is a good thing, right? I think it needs to be rigid.
They also made me sign a waiver on the curtain wall too because they didn't like it.
Is that, do you want to talk about that curtain wall?
No.
Why?
He doesn't want to talk about it. So he's going to do his head in.
Do you know why?
No, I don't know why. No,
I remember nearly vomiting because I put the panes in, the 350 kilos, put the panes in with my excavator. I welded a crane off the end of my excavator so I'd get the sucker bank down lower. And I only had like 20 mil tolerance to bring it in over a deck and under the 2.5 metre eave.
Slips in.
With an excavator?
Yes. Okay. I built a road in front of it. But yeah, we had to rotate this pane, and then one of the neighbour helped me as well, and he said, it's slipping. I had the front of the excavator. I nearly vomited out of the front of the excavator. I could just see it was one of the biggest ones, and I could just see it. He said it's slipping, but it was rotating a little bit. And I go, oh, it's slipping. It's going to be on the ground. It's going to be broken. Oh, no. So I literally nearly vomited. I just went pale. I felt sick. I was just about to vomit. And they go, no, it's okay. So, yeah, we finally got all that in, and then I was sick for 2 months after that because it was a build-up to work out how to actually do it. It was months of planning trying to work out actually how cranes couldn't lift in under the roof.
I remember you telling me this story. It was me, you, and Air Boss Dan were grabbing dinner, actually, and your wife, and we ended up – I said to my wife, Nicole, I was going to be home at – I'll go for dinner at 5:30. I'll be home by about 7. I think it was 1 a.m. She's like, "You're coming home," right. And we're still talking.
So you told me this. So it's an interesting to touch on, like your physical response to that stress and the build up. You know, and obviously it impacted you for a couple of months afterwards. Is this the reason why you don't physically build anymore?
It has damaged my health, and I mean, that Vanessa stood by me for so long, being the way that I am.
And she's a nurse, is that correct?
Yeah.
Do you think that's the caring nature that I feel nurses just have?
I think so. She's very caring. She's very calm.
Yeah.
She's the glue in the family.
Yeah.
Nothing. She just goes, oh, well, okay, that's fine. We'll work it out.
And how are you now?
Good now.
Yeah.
When I left or finished work, I had a job that fell through. It was going to be a certified passive house designed by Envirotecture.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just about to turn ground, and essentially the bank made it too difficult. And they sort of said, we're canning it, we're going to redesign it. And I said, oh, I'm out.
When was this?
This was 2 years ago.
Yeah, right. And you're just like, I'm done with building.
Yeah, so that's it. I'm done. So I found employment for staff.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I was over, feeling pretty washed up, thinking, oh.
But you still have performance membranes going, or PHCP.
Yeah, but I guess, a craftsman, and that's my identity, and I felt like I lost my identity because I'm not doing that anymore.
That's a really interesting point, isn't it? Because, I it's probably an interesting conversation to have with Devin as well, because, I mean, I identify as a builder, you know.
Me like, too, still do.
You know, and as much Man. As.
Yeah, when someone asks you, what do you do for work, what do you say?
Well, I get offended when people go, oh, you're the rep for ProClimber. It's like I get so offended, and they go, why aren't you answering me? Because I'm struggling to answer it because I'm a builder. I'm not a sales rep. ProClimber has always been the vehicle for me to get to where I want to go with the build environment, and that is to change the building industry.
Do you love where you are now? Do you love the space that you are, what you're doing right now?
The relief when I did stop building was – it was amazing. This whole weight lifted off my shoulders.
Yeah.
With no stress. That stress had gone, continuously was there. But yeah, I really struggled after it. Had some serious problems and sort of that whole perfectionism really came out after I finished work. I think work was an outlet for that.
Yeah, okay.
and it was seriously a little bit of a mental problem.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it all spilled out into home then.
Yeah.
So no one could do anything at home. No one could do anything right.
Oh, because you were wanting to control the scenario.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really. And no one could do anything right. And if someone would do it, I'd go, that's not right. And it really became a problem, so I had to seek some help.
Yeah, well, good. You know what? Good on you for seeking help. And I know a little bit of the story, and you know, I feel like we could
fucking. I think we got to get. I think that's a whole other podcast.
We have to talk for hours. But yeah, and I'd actually love to get you back on to unpack it if you're willing to talk about it. Because I think it is important, and if you don't want to, that's totally fine.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I guess there's a lot of these stories about this, and I think is it just trendy talking about it? I don't know. You know, because it was that point where I've been like it for years, for decades, and it didn't exist, or I thought, no, that's not me.
Does it all make sense now?
I'd be weak. And someone that I worked for had a mental breakdown. And I go, well, what is wrong with them? It must be like a chemical thing.
Yeah,
like,
can't they just
be something wrong with their brain.
Yeah.
And then obviously I'm having these struggles, and then it all just blew up with anxiety.
Yeah.
And that was obviously overworked.
Yeah.
Exhausted and anxiety. I couldn't answer a phone. I just totally lost it. Went to ground. Just nearly had a nervous breakdown, I guess. So it does exist, and it does affect you, and affects everyone around you, more importantly.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah, you and I have touched on that before as well, you know, like that the impact, because you can live in your own bubble. I know I experience this sometimes, and even recently I live in my own bubble and operate in my own head, and I lose track, and it sounds like you have as well, of how that's impacting the people that are around you and the people that are closest to you.
Mm.
The trendy thing I can understand, you know, like there's so many more people getting diagnosed on the spectrum or ADHD or whatever, but I think it's just we have much more of an understanding of it now. And I think it's good that we're recognising this, because then it allows us to have the tools to be able to then approach life. Because, like, I had the privilege of coming down to an open house last week that Matt O'Grady put on. And I think this is a nice way to kind of round out this conversation. I see the impact that you have had on Matt's life, and I look at how motivated Matt is now to then help educate the industry. That's because of you. Like, you've done that. And I think that's something you should be incredibly proud of. And I looked at that people, like captured audience of like 60 plus people in that room, so engaged with that event that you help facilitate, and the impact that that's going to have as those people go and permeate out in their own spaces around them. Like, that is so much bigger than you building 3 or 4 high performance or passive houses a year. So
I have written down here, and I
mentor, yeah.
So from my perspective of where I sit now, you would be in the top probably 3 people from that journey, from when I first did that course to where I am now, as someone I look up to, go to for questions. Like, I don't think I probably never told you that. I would say that you are that for so many people.
Mm. I don't think others ring me as much as you do.
Yeah, I know, but like, you have this ability just to, like, I know that you go back to being perfectionist and everything. You're actually so humble, calm.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's kind of like ironic. Like,
but you've got to share.
You have to share. Yeah. And I think you seeing this in Matt and his ability and his thirst to educate. You know, he's actually realizing that he doesn't want to be a builder anymore. He's
not a gatekeeper.
He doesn't want to be a builder anymore because he wants to educate. Yeah. And I think the more and more people out there that are doing it, it's almost like selfless. They're like, no, I want to see the industry get better, so I want to be there helping educate people. Mm. Like, there's no keeping it close to their chest anymore. Like, I feel like even just the 3 of us sitting here now, 3 builders sitting here doing the same kind of thing, the fact that we live 20 odd kilometres away from each other and yet we're doing this to try and help better the industry, like, that didn't exist when you got back into this 20 years ago.
No, it was difficult. You used to have to ask groups to, you know, put a message out when they meet to, I had about 300 people over the course of 2 years through home.
Yeah.
People fly over from Sydney, New South Wales,
wow,
Victoria. to go through. It's because it was essentially wrapped in Procolor on the outside and the inside for a whole year with no cladding and no plaster.
How'd that 180 days stand up?
Well, I don't know. I could take some out and test it.
I'm going to say it's fine.
I had all confidence in the product, and you could say, "Oh, it's in Tasmania." And
I've sat mine out longer,
but yeah, I think the west facade copped it a fair bit. The UV is pretty high, so but it's a fantastic product. So had no problems with that. It was the first wall that I covered.
So you now run a company called PHCP and Taz, and also partners in Performance Membrane. Mm. So, you know, we obviously want to give you guys a massive prop and a shout out, because, you know, all our projects are completely wrapped in these products. So to round this out, like, what is it that you guys do now at Performance Membranes?
Well, we're innovators in the industry, and we want to change the industry through education and knowledge sharing. That's, I guess, our vision.
I love how you answer that question with that, because at the end of the day, you guys sell product, but you've chosen to answer that in a way of why? Through education, the why. Like, I love that.
Yeah, and that's what it is about. Like I say before, the products are the vehicle.
Yeah.
To get the message out there.
I love that the motivation is not selling product.
I've got one final question before we wrap this up. Are you proud of where you are now?
Well, yeah, I guess I'm... I don't look at it like that. I like to sort of hide in the background and connect the dots and put everyone together and connect people. That's what I like to do. I like to stand back, and you don't really hear me talking, which is a disappointment to me, because I know how much I've got to share.
Yeah.
One-on-one, no problem. Stand out in front of 100 people, or just sort of, you know, I did it last week. I probably dribbled on. I took a blood pressure tablet before I stood up there about an hour before, and probably made me talk too much. I was talking about a boring subject, but
you were talking about ventilation.
If you stopped tomorrow building, and if you stopped doing membranes tomorrow, are you proud of what you've done in this industry?
Well, yeah,
good.
But there's so much more to do.
I love that. But sit in the moment for a second, Justin. Sit in the moment for a second.
Yeah, like I think sometimes we don't stop and just go, you know what? I've done some pretty cool shit. I've made this place a better place.
And the impact you guys are having from Performance Membranes. I know Performance Membranes is much bigger than you, but you are like the impetus of it. And just the impact that's having nationally now is pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's pretty special. And it's always what I wanted.
Yeah.
To have a whole bunch of builders as a network, as a team.
Yeah.
A bunch of builders, a group, friends, to be able to share and help each other. That was always my dream, to have this network, like Proclimber do in New Zealand, where they have all these groups, a builders network, and they're all together. And that's what I wanted, this knowledge sharing.
Yeah.
And there's still a bit to do in that. We are doing it, and we're only just scraping the surface, I think.
Yeah, 100%. And I love it. I'm going to finish on that, because we are just scraping the surface, I think.
Thank you very much for joining us, Justin.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having me in.
Cheers.
Cheers.